We're having an interesting conversation with Mike Haskey from Veterans for Peace, and he's lived an interesting life, seen a lot of things, not only in Vietnam and the jungles there, but on the streets of St. Paul, Minnesota. Quite a insane story you're telling us. So you see this woman right down the street, hunted down like a dog, pretty much.
Yeah, it was Thursday night. I think it was September the 4th. It was the last evening where about, I think, a couple hundred protesters were arrested. They simply just sat down on a bridge. I think it was the Marion Street Bridge there in St. Paul. And I had been following the protests, moving from block to block. And as I was on my way up there, I heard about a series of about, at least a half a dozen concussion grenades, like the ones that they fired at us when I was at the diner there, Mickey's Diner in downtown St. Paul. And as I was running toward the direction of where the sounds of the explosions were, I was running in a parking lot. It was actually a Sears parking lot, which was right near where the concussion grenades were going off. And there was a woman frantically running between cars, and the police were pursuing her on bicycles. And she was simply, I'm sure, just a protester. In fact, she later said, after when she was arrested, that she was an attorney. But they were pursuing her just like a wild animal. And so she got between two cars, and then this one cop speared her with his bicycle. And he was moving at a really rapid pace when he speared her and knocked her down. And then another police officer came over there within a matter of seconds. They got her down and were extremely rough with her. She was probably in her late 30s, early 40s. She had this tremendous fear in her face as they got her down, and they put their knee to her back, handcuffed her, and then they got her up, and then they put her in a van. I probably took maybe at least a dozen photographs. Then there was another occasion where I was where a woman got pepper sprayed. And really heavily. And so she went inside this small grocery store, and she was yelling and screaming for medics. And so I happened to go in there, and there were some people there that were helping her. And they sprayed her directly in the eyes. I mean, she really got a full burst of the pepper spray. And so anyway, they were rinsing her eyes out with water. And so I asked her if it was okay if I took some photographs in case she needed that evidence. So, I mean, she said fine, so I took photographs of that. But there were other incidents where the police grabbed a guy, and his face was just totally sopping wet from the pepper spray. And then, like I say, there was another occasion where they were grabbing people. They were trying to instigate things. And there was some music that was being played. I think it was on the 3rd. Except on Wednesday, where that was right near the Capitol building there, and I believe there was an entertainer by the name of Michael Ferrante. He was a well-known artist, and also the Iraq Veterans Against the War.
You might be talking about the vocalist from Rage Against the Machine, perhaps.
Yeah. Well, Michael Ferrante was on first, and he's a real strong supporter of Iraq Veterans Against the War, because on one occasion he took off, went to Iraq with his guitar, and just spent some time in Iraq trying to understand what was going on. And so he has a real kinship with Iraq Veterans Against the War. And then when I know a lot of the Iraq Veterans Against the War because I photographed all of them when I went back to the Winter Soldier investigation in Silver Spring, Maryland in March. I took about probably over 1,000 photographs. Anyway, one of the Iraq veterans came up to me after Michael Ferrante performed, and he said there was going to be a surprise visit by Rage Against the Machine. And so sure enough, a few minutes later, Rage Against the Machine showed up, and they were going to do a couple of tunes, and the police pulled the cord. They pulled the electricity cord, so they couldn't perform. And so someone got a hold of one of those battery powered megaphones, and so they started doing a piece using the megaphone. And what happened after the police pulled the cord is all of those people that were listening to the music, and there was hundreds and hundreds of them, maybe well over 1,000, 1,500. What they did is that the Poor People's March was just getting ready to go down the street, and they were right near where they were getting ready to start. And all of the people that were listening to the music joined the Poor People's March with all of that energy, which they were really upset because the police had pulled the cord, pulled up the electricity so that Rage Against the Machine couldn't play. And so all these people joined that march. And I know what the police were doing. They were trying to set up an incident. They were trying to create an incident where the people that were listening to the music would join the Poor People's March and march downtown. And, you know, that became a pretty a high energy incident. And people were really upset when the police pulled the cord on Rage Against the Machine. And so I really believe that they were provoking the peace march as they were going downtown.
And there were a lot of games played at the DNC as well, albeit not as extreme as the RNC, but they had a heavy police presence there, and they had a holding facility, quite a large one, that the local news there in Denver had reported on shortly before the protest had begun. And so there were some people that have also put some YouTube videos out about that particular very dark-looking facility. And there were some other activist groups that were promoting using violence and disrupting the DNC that put out flyers. There is actually one here at the Laughing Horse called Disrupt the DNC. And it makes you wonder sometimes where some of these groups come from when they get very organized and they break off from the peaceful protesters with a direct MO to cause some sort of conflict with the police just to do that. But unfortunately, that gives the cops the pretext to attack everybody. So it really makes you wonder, whether it be at the DNC or the RNC, some of these characters are constantly there in Portland at the protest in 1999, Seattle, Washington. And there's a lot of people that have asked questions about these groups, about the possibility of agent provocateur use to get something started.
Yeah, I mean, when I was there, I saw some video where they showed supposedly two protesters that were, they had masks on, and they went up to a police car and they started breaking the windows out with hammers. And here's the thing being filmed, and you have to ask yourself, how did these so-called protesters get that close to a police car with hammers and hammer out the windshield? Because I know there was provocateurs there. They used it extensively during the Vietnam War, you know. And so, you know, I could see it happen, you know, in some other cases. You know, another person took a piece of wood or some kind of a long pole, and he broke a window out. And you have to ask yourself, you know, are these protesters doing this, or are these provocateurs?
Yeah, and then you have the media going specifically up to them as if they represent everybody else, saying these are the protesters. And they did that in Portland a couple of years ago when these guys said that we're going to burn an effigy of a U.S. soldier. Great. Portland makes the Bill O'Reilly report. Now, of course, they had a Fox News guy there just waiting for something to happen so they can exploit that and say, look, this is Portland. These are these crazy liberal Portlanders in Little Beirut. But, yeah, so they're definitely playing some games.
Yeah, there was on one occasion when I was in the Poor People's March, I noticed that there was a news channel, local news channel, I think it was Channel 5 there in Minneapolis, and there was a woman. They had a little patch on her blouse that said Channel 5, and then there was the person that was accompanying her, of course, was the videographer, and he was a really tall guy. He was carrying a huge camera, had short hair, and I decided to photograph him with my still camera. And then he came up to me and stuck a camera in my face and said, "Here, since you photographed us, I'm going to photograph you and let you see how it feels." And so I just couldn't believe what he was doing. So what I did is I ran around him several times so he couldn't photograph me. And then he stuck the camera in my face, and I told him, I said, "Listen," I said, "I'm a Vietnam veteran," and I said, "my unit committed atrocities in Vietnam when we fired 155 millimeter howitzer rounds into civilian targets." And I told him, I said, "And you don't know that. And you don't know that." And so from that point, I just went on. Because, you know, they're there to focus and film anything that's negative, and that they'll use that footage on the news, the mainstream news. I mean, they have no idea why protesters are in the field. They have no idea why we're protesting this war. You know, they have no idea. If the American people knew how many innocent people we are killing in Iraq and Afghanistan, or that we killed in Vietnam, Cambodia, and Laos, the American people would have panic attacks.
I want to ask you some questions about what you think about this conflict with Georgia, if you have any opinions on that and the idea of this war escalating beyond something that's been confined to Iraq and Afghanistan for now to perhaps something that could, you know, blow up into something else. And again, it makes me suspicious going back into, I think, a lot of these Marines and young men being set up to just work for someone else as a de facto mercenary, not caring about their own health, but using them for a period of time till they can no longer be used or keep up psychologically. You know, it really makes you wonder, because we're also out of debt now, yet we're starting these tensions. We're in debt. We're in debt big time, all-time debtor nation, while Russia's out of debt. So it doesn't make very much sense to want to start a conflict right now. And
I think what we're seeing in Georgia is so obvious. You know, that NATO is boxing in Russia. I keep waiting. I've been waiting for years to wondering when the when Russia was going to finally put up a stand against the encroachment of the U.S. government and with their missile sites and their and going into what was then these small countries that was a part of the Soviet Union, like Georgia. I mean, the president of Georgia was educated in the United States and is receiving, you know, billions of dollars from the U.S. government because, they're going to have access to a pipeline that's going to go through their country and on and on and on and on. And that's exactly what we're seeing, you know. And I think that Russia has finally just drawn the line. They say enough is enough. But, you know, with the high cost of with oil and natural gas prices skyrocketing and the Soviet Union having a tremendous amount of oil and natural gas in their own country, I think you're going to see a resurgence of the Russian military.
I want to let everybody know about this report that just came from Webster Tarpley. Landmark Russian TV debate on 9/11. This is going to be taking place tomorrow. The telecast will go out in the middle of prime time. Among the participants, we have the general, the commander of the Russian Armed Forces, the guy who was the commander on 9/11, and he's been a leading critic of the U.S. official version of what happened that day. The Russians, according to this view, are through doing favors for the U.S., especially in regard to Washington's official myths about 9/11 and the War on Terror, and this telecast will deliver that message in a clear and unmistakable way. And that is according to Webster Tarpley. Interesting stuff. That's an interesting headline. I wonder what's going to come out of that. Not that I think Russia is any purveyor of truth in any way, shape, or form. I have my suspicions and concerns about the background of Putin as well.
Well, I mean, United States is an empire. China is an empire. Russia is an empire. And it's like everybody's doing the same thing. Everybody's corralling natural resources. And unfortunately, the poor countries of the world are the ones that are going to be suffering. I was in London a couple of years ago, and I went over and I heard Danny Glover speak. And there was a woman there from Uganda. And she was invited to come over and speak when Danny Glover was there. And I took some pictures of her, got to know her, and she said something to me that was very, very profound. She told me, she said, Africa is dying, and it is being engineered by the West. There was a simple statement that she meant that she said, and she didn't say anything after that. She just said that Africa was dying, and it was being engineered by the West. And I'm sure that engineering is being done by countries like Russia, like the United States, like China, like Canada, certainly European countries. But this is what we're doing. We're going to war against third world countries that can't defend themselves.
Can you say one more time where that video is on YouTube? If you can just kind of try to recollect that.
I've seen the video. I've only seen it once. It's interesting. The guy that photographed me was later arrested a couple days later on that Thursday, because I took pictures of him being arrested. But he put it on YouTube, and I believe it was on the I believe it was on the 2nd or 3rd of September, And if you go to YouTube, and I think it's listed under Vietnam Medic Tells Off the Cops at the RNC. And I think that pretty much covers, you know, what I was doing and what a lot of people should be doing, because we've got to confront the police. We've got to get the truth out to the American public that America has been not become a police state. We've become a military occupation that is using shock and awe against its own people.
There's one headline I want to go over here pertaining to Iran. They're announcing their war games. It's going to be taking place in a couple days. 3 days of war games on Monday involving anti-aircraft defense systems. We'll get into that when we come back. 512-646-1984. That's our number. We'll be back in a few.
You're listening to We the People Radio Network. Pure energy. We the People Radio Network.
I think it's obvious that America's dying. Already in front of our very eyes, you could see the flies, like it's becoming a corpse. But we're just too drugged to even see it. But it's still important that we talk about these things, even if we're not saving the world, because there are some people out there looking for answers very desperately right now that have turned away from the mainstream, that are just seeking answers so they don't go insane. Because a lot of people don't want to go insane. They want the truth. They just want it from a trusted, reliable source. So that's what we're trying to do here at AlexAnswer.com, at We the People Radio Network, and the other networks that are similar to this. And we even saw Amy Goodman attacked. And there's some things I may not agree with that she may say, or wish she would go into this issue or go a little deeper. But regardless, here's a woman, a journalist, being attacked by these really messed up individuals and thugs, criminals, basically, that have been given the uniform, been given the shield, been given the badge. And it's frightening. So what is your take on the future, Michael, and where we're going, be it nationally, but also being someone from Portland, how you see our region here at times?
You know, I think the biggest thing is that people aren't coming out and seeing and talking about what they see is happening right in front of them. I mean, I had a friend of mine that was in Minneapolis. He was an MP in Vietnam and during the Tet Offensive, and he held up a sign that just simply said America's dying, you know. And everywhere I look, I see this happening, you know. I mean, you know, what was it? I heard that one of the latest statistics is that the mayor of Los Angeles, who's Hispanic, I can't think of his name right now, but he made a statement. He says there are 80,000 homeless people in Los Angeles County. 80,000 homeless people in Los Angeles County. I mean, you can take a look. Martin Luther King made a statement. He says, the greatest purveyor of violence in the world today is my own government. He said that in a speech that he gave in April of 1967. Also in the same speech, he made a statement. He says, any country that spends more money on militarism than it does on programs of social uplift is a country that is facing spiritual death. And that's what I see happening in this country. Everywhere I look, I see people who don't have jobs, don't have health care. The schools are inadequate. You know, I think that one of the statistics which is really shocking is that 50% of inner city kids across America do not graduate from high school.
I saw that report, too. I think it was particularly dealing with Los Angeles, and that was what the mayor had brought up about a month ago. And they definitely, the actual dropout numbers are lower than the actual numbers. Pretty similar to what we see with unemployment numbers, which have gone up recently. There was 85,000 jobs last month that was lost last month, and that brought the official unemployment number to 6.1, but I'm sure it's well over 10% or 15%. It depends on where you are in the country as well. That's also why we see a lot of people move to the city and off the farms for the jobs, which also seems to be a part of it too, getting us all into these highly densely populated areas. I want to mention this. because he brought it up pertaining to life expectancy and health care. Because the headline I saw today, life expectancy drops for many Americans as health care failures mount. And, you know, with a lot of people not having health care, it would be inevitable for us to see a headline like this. The most recent numbers on life expectancy around the world show that the numbers are going down. But in absolute and relative terms, the trend has been blamed on the large proportion of the population with no health insurance or inadequate health insurance. More than 47 million U.S. residents are uninsured, with millions more underinsured. Now get this, here's the kicker. The U.S. worldwide ranking of life expectancy has dropped to 42nd from its record of 11th. I think which 11th was back in 1980.
You know, here's something that I think a lot of people figured out. I certainly did probably 10 years ago when we started exporting all of our manufacturing jobs overseas. I'm not saying most, but certainly a large percentage of them. And what we're doing is that these companies are going overseas to utilize a cheap labor force and maximize their profits. And then they send the product back to the United States. And the American people don't have the jobs that were exported overseas. And so how do you expect these people then to buy the finished product? And that's what you're seeing. We're seeing millions and millions and millions of American people who are unemployed or underemployed, and this system is going to fail. And it's the most obvious thing in the world that, you know, what's happening in this country, and it's going to get worse and worse and worse. And, you know, I simply see things crumbling around me. I mean, as a photojournalist, I constantly see, you know, I see it in the faces of so many people who don't have health care, who don't have good education, who don't have adequate jobs. And I see a lot of fear in the streets. You know, I see a lot of anxiety, you know, things are happening so fast in this country. I read a book one time. I'm sure a lot of people in the audience have probably read it. It was a book that was written by Alvin Toffler. The book was called Future Shock. He defined the term future shock as the human response to overstimulation. And that's what we're seeing in the society. There are times when I take on so much information. And I'm sure a lot of people here, and I'm sure that you who are interviewing me and other people in this room, that you get on this information highway and you start processing so much of this information. And sometimes I feel like I'm suffering from jet lag, you know. And so that's what we're seeing in our society. We're moving faster and faster and faster and faster. And what it's causing is tremendous anxiety. And as a result of that, you know, people are developing a lot of symptoms of anxiety. They're experiencing stress. They're experiencing obesity, the increase of alcoholism, drug addictions, sex addiction, and it just simply goes on and on and on.
And the TV doesn't help much either with the overemphasis on sex and violence and other things that have warped the minds of the youth and the adult children. Also, that are out there in our society that don't want to grow up beyond the Simpsons, Idiocracy, King of the Hill generation being spoon-fed Starbucks, McDonald's, and American Idol, along with maybe the UFC in the side screen. A couple guys constantly bashing each other's brains in because it's familiar and it's called fun. I'm really worried.
I can't agree with you more. I mean, you look at the school shootings that have happened in the last year. I mean, it's amazing what happened at Virginia Tech, you know, and we all of a sudden that's out of the news. You know, it's all of the things that we're seeing. Look at the demise of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. You know, the U.S. government is going to take over their losses, which amount to about $5 trillion. And so, and of course now the foreign investors are feeling better now that the U.S. government took it over, because they've supposedly, from statistics I'm seeing, they've got about 20%, you know, that they have invested in Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae. And so it just goes on and on and on. And eventually we're going to go broke.
Oh,
Yeah, we're already broke. They just keep, you know, giving us the credit so we can go deeper into debt. But these guys are like, yay, Wall Street's up. Party time. The drinks are still flowing. The smokes are still here. They're not going to pull the plug. We can still gamble on the big casino in the sky being Wall Street. It's totally insane, but it does have a time limit. The banks continue to fail. That's what we're doing here, though, getting you ready for the upcoming crash or whatever else is going to happen. And even if you go out and get some stored food, you need to be eating that stuff. Whole grain, stuff that you rotate into your diet. There's a lot of stuff that we eat that's not very healthy. Now's the time to make those preparations because it's going to be tougher in the months ahead with the continuation of the dollar being devalued. So things are looking really frightening, and I'm seeing a lot of aggression, violence, tension, anxiety, depression right here in the streets of good old Portland, Oregon. Is it any wonder why the bars are doing so very well at this time? Because people just want to drink, drink, drink. Pour me, pour me, pour me, pour me, pour me another drink. We'll be back after this. In North Carolina. I want to thank you for calling in. How you doing tonight?
Oh, doing great. How are you?
Doing very well. What's on your mind?
Well, I heard you guys talking about that Russian announcement tomorrow concerning 9/11, and I just kind of had some thoughts I wanted to share with you.
Okay, go ahead.
All right, thanks. Well, we know that Russia has extensive intelligence services, and this has been going back years and years and years, including at the time of 9/11. We also know that Russia has recently been provoked by Western globalists like Zbigniew Brzezinski. Now, for those listening that might not be aware, maybe you are, Zbigniew Brzezinski has recently blamed Russia for attacking Georgia in a latest edition of Time magazine. Also, Brzezinski, way back in, I believe, Carter's term, he was behind funding bin Laden during the Soviet-Afghan War. So I think that what we're seeing here is kind of different globalist factions posturing. And then you have the thing of Russia Today, which is kind of like Russia's version of CNN, covering the Ron Paul revolution, the Ron Paul rally, Ron Paul's announcement, I believe, yesterday or today. So I guess the advice that I have for people, whether they're in 9/11 truth or not, is really tomorrow be very careful to, even if it's true and accurate and correct information, just be really careful not to get baited into following Russia's 9/11 announcement tomorrow and kind of taking that to heart immediately and not asking questions about that. Because if you do, I just see our government, they could easily use that. If you publicly support that, in the future, they could easily use that as evidence that people in 9/11 truth are potential terrorists, and that is the last thing that we need in this movement, especially because their party line in the media is that, you know, Russia is bad, and if you side with Russia, you know, you're on the side of, you know, war and attacking other countries.
Sure.
It's totally ironic, you know.
Sure, and I agree with everything you said before, and we've mentioned Brzezinski many, many times, and just to add to that, Alex Jones was on Russia TV as well, and I watched that clip, and some of the things Alex had said disturbed me, to be honest with you. Alex had said on Russia Today that Russia should stay there. Please stay. Please resist Western imperialism. And I would be thinking that Alex Jones would stay a little impartial, knowing that he has also suggested that this whole conflict could be staged. So that was something that alarmed me and something that I think could put him on the radar. It was a little bit alarming. They've also had Paul Craig Roberts on the line as well. So I don't think Russia Today is involved in any purveying of truth or promoting truth, whether it comes to 9/11 or the war on terror. They've played their part, and they assisted the United States prior to 9/11 and the invasion of Afghanistan by helping out with troops in Uzbekistan.
Oh, and that's where they were, where we had some CIA secret prison where they were boiling people, I believe. Remember,
yes.
I remember seeing some kind of story about that. See, this is all very suspicious to me. I agree with you. And especially if, you mentioned the Alex Jones thing. I heard that interview, and that kind of disturbed me as well. You know, where he kind of came out, and it was almost like, is he leading this movement, and why is he posturing against the United States for Russia on Russian TV? That was a question for me that I had.
And Russian TV reminds me very much of the Western media, though. The way they present the news, the sound bites, even the appearance of the women, how calm they are all about what's going on in their own country. So, I see propaganda coming from both sides. And I've also heard reports that Russia, as well as Georgia, have used cluster bombs.
Well, see, you know, it's very difficult to know what to believe. And, you know, I know a lot of people in 9/11 Truth are very, very passionate, and God bless them all. Or if you don't believe in God, then, you know, I think they're doing virtuous things. But I just don't want people to fall into being sort of this sheeple mentality. Okay, we have a resistance movement, and here's an announcement for a foreign government. We need to be very careful about that, because I think what people in 9/11 Truth, people who question 9/11, what we need to do tomorrow is, if they come out and blatantly say that 9/11 was an inside job by the Americans, we need to step back and take a deep breath and let the neocons respond, because I think that's what the message is really for. And if we take the bait on that, I really see sort of a further escalation of martial law into this country. And man, I'll tell you, that is going to be a dangerous thing.
Well, I want to thank you for bringing up those points. That was that's something that we need to look at. Anything else you want to add?
You had mentioned, I think before you came onto the break, about food. We've lost 72% of the seed corn in the United States. So I would definitely recommend people to heed your advice on that. Start stocking up when you go to the supermarket. You know what? Look for deals. Buy a few cans every time you go, and, you know, before you know it, you'll have a couple months' supply. It doesn't really cost a lot of money, but look into it, take care of yourselves, and stock up, water, maybe some water filters, too. We're going into hard times, especially with the economy the way it is now, and, I really appreciated the fact that you had said that on air.
I want to thank you for your call, and, I've done some shows on that in the past, and I will again in the future, to talk about martial law. Here in Portland, we saw MH-6 black helicopters, which are designed for insertion and removal. Carrying M16s, you can have three or four guys on each side. You can extend these things out to carry more troops. They're specifically meant for the urban environment. Mayor Potter authorized live fire in the city, live rope insertion, which is troops jumping on buildings, explosive use, flashbangs, surveillance, counter-surveillance, side munitions. The list goes on and on and on. Mike, did you happen to catch any of that action, or were you out of town when that was going on with the black helicopters over the city, the MH-6 urban warrior drill?
You saw some of that? Oh, yeah. I mean, the city was, helicopters were flying everywhere. I was at a site there by the Capitol building there, and there was a tall building across the street, and the cops were on top of the top, were way up in the building. There was four of them, and they were photographing us, and there was, and all of them had binoculars, and they were watching everything we were doing, you know, because I photographed them looking at us, you know what I mean? No, this was in Minneapolis, in St. Paul, when during the RNC. I mean, the cops were everywhere. I had video cameras pointed at me. I had, cops were photographing us. I mean, there was helicopters flying everywhere. I felt like almost, I was around a lot of helicopters in my unit in Vietnam, and I felt like I was back in Vietnam.
Hey, have you heard anything about CERN? Have you followed that Okay, because there's a lot going on with that as well. The superconductor, they said it was successful, shooting two beams towards this collider. A lot of people were thinking that the end of the world was going to happen today. I wasn't thinking that that was going to happen, but I'm actually wondering myself what they're actually doing. I mean, there's a lot of intense stuff going on in the world, you know? And you wonder if that's some new weapon they're testing. I mean, is it really just scientists trying to understand the Big Bang? Or is there something else going on? I mean, I just read you a story about Russia developing some super EMF weapon and all this stuff just being shared with all these countries. Iran's got it. China's got it. They have different types of EMF weapons. There's different degrees, you know, of advancement. I'm sure the U.S. is leading that along with Russia and China with the smaller projects going to the other countries. But it makes you wonder. And you had said during the break that in the future we may have to come up with new words to describe the type of tyranny in hell on earth that we might experience.
I think the greatest weapon that we're developing in the United States toward our own people is fear. I think that's the greatest weapon. That's the one thing I saw with the riot police and what they, just the way they posture themselves, you know, guys hitting their hands with their batons. I photographed a lot of police and I wanted to photograph their eyes. You know, and some of them, you know, they're pointing weapons at me. So it was just amazing. But I'm a person that sees things getting much, much worse. I mean, I just see it happening every day.
Well, after this break, last break coming up, let's get your kind of analysis on what you think is, you know, I've talked about a lot, but we'll get kind of your thoughts on that. And we'll also cover some other reports. I want to talk about the Earth's geomagnetic field. I'm going to give an update on what's going on with that, because that has an effect on life on this planet. It has an effect on communications. And some say they were about to go into sunspot cycle 24, which is a little bit late. So to compound all these problems, kind of interesting to see this at a time where we find ourselves living in some kind of a bizarre handbasket. Give us a call, 512-646-1984. Talk to you then. Well, Mike, these are wild times. There's no shortage of information, and I want to go ahead and share this before we continue our discussion. Sloshing inside Earth changes protective magnetic field. That's the headline from space.com. It's a follow-up to another report that I read about the magnetic field changing, shifting, declining, which came from National Geographic about a month and a half ago. The article reads that something beneath the surface is changing Earth's protective magnetic field, which may leave satellites and other space assets vulnerable to high-energy radiation. The gradual weakening of the overall magnetic field can take hundreds and even thousands of years, but smaller, more rapid fluctuations within months may leave satellites unprotected and catch scientists off guard, new research finds. A new model uses satellite data from the past 9 years to show how sudden fluid motions within the Earth's core can alter the magnetic envelope around our planet. This represents the first time that researchers have been able to detect such rapid magnetic field changes taking place over just a few months, not thousands of years. So there's something going on there, and I wonder how it affects human behavior. The last major change in the field took place some 780,000 years ago during a magnetic reversal, although such reversals seem to occur more often on average. A flip in the north and south poles typically involves a weakening in the magnetic field followed by a period of rapid recovery. Some studies in recent years have suggested the next reversal might be imminent, but the jury is still out on that question as to when it may take place. If there are magnetic storms and high-energy particles coming from the sun, i.e. sunspot cycle 24, which is now late, the satellites could be affected and their connections could be lost. The consistent, constant radiation bombardment from the sun blows with the solar wind to Earth, where it flows against and around the magnetic field. So that's a lot of information there. And I wonder where we're going to see that escalate to. But in terms of everything else going on in the world and our concerns, what do you think Portland's going to be like in, say, a couple of years, or say 1 year if the economy crashes, looking at our own geography here and the demographics?
You know, I've lived in Portland since 1976, okay? So I've been here, 32 years. One of the things I notice is that we don't get the winters we used to get. We just simply don't get the ice storms. We don't get the snow. And when I travel around this country, it's like I met a few vets that were in Veterans for Peace in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area. And I says, what are your winters like here? And he said, well, we used to have some really harsh winters, but we simply don't get the winters we used to have. I've talked to people in other parts of the country, Spokane, even in, on the East Coast. And so I think that what I see happening is as a result of global warming, as we continue to see more and more drought, and a lot of that evaporation of the moisture into the air, which eventually leads to tornadoes, floods in other parts of the world. But you look at the Southwest and how it's drying up. Look at Los Angeles area. Look at Arizona. Look at that entire Southwest. Look at the tornadoes that are now that have hit just recently, back to back, four tornadoes. And what I see happening is that as we continue to see more and more drought and more tornadoes in the Gulf area, you're going to see more and more population changes, and you're going to start seeing people migrating to the Pacific Northwest. I think that's one of the major things we're going to see is more and more people migrating to the Pacific Northwest, especially around Portland, Seattle. So anybody who wants to hang on to their homes for a while, they'll probably they'll be worth a lot more money in 5 or 10 years.
I have said the exact same thing, and you're the first other than me to say that almost word for word, that in Portland, as a result of those things, we'll see more people come here. And then you look at the idea of the big quake in California and the situations there with their state going broke, thanks to Schwarzenegger, who may have been put there by design to destabilize California. It really makes you wonder what's coming next. So we're definitely going to have some food issues at that time, guaranteed, for sure. Yeah. Well, it's... What else would you like to add to that?
Well, I have a friend of mine that's his name is Brian Wilson, not from the Beach Boys. Brian Wilson was a man that was in the military, was spent 4 months in Vietnam, was an eyewitness to four villages being bombed with napalm. There were American jets being flown by the Vietnamese pilots, and he went in and saw the devastating destruction of the American jets dropping napalm on all civilian targets. Afterwards, he went into the operations room where there were maps on the wall, and military officers, U.S. military officers, had pins on the wall on all these targets they were going to be hitting. And he went up to the map and he started pulling out pins and said, "You can't bomb that area. It's a civilian target. You can't bomb that area over here. It's a civilian target. You can't bomb this area over here. It's a civilian target." And this was in the Delta of Vietnam. Well, they threw him out of the orderly room or out of the operations room, and consequently he became a threat, so they sent him back to Vietnam. He now lives in Portland, and he just recently moved up here from Arcata. And he thinks the answer is that for people to start thinking local, start growing their food locally, start greening their houses, which is what he's doing now. He's putting up solar panels. He's putting additional insulation in every room in his house. And this is one reason why I live in Portland, Oregon. I've traveled all over the United States. I was born in the military. My father was a military officer. I was in Japan, Germany, East Coast, West Coast. I was one of the when my family arrived in Japan, we were the first dependents to arrive in Japan after the war. So we were a part of the occupation force. So I've done a lot of traveling. I've seen a lot of part of the world and the country. But I love Portland, Oregon, because I think we're a very progressive, intelligent part of the world.
We're about out of time, and I want to ask you one more thing that I'm assuming you probably have an answer for. Why do you think Portland has been picked to host repeated martial law drills? I've try to answer the question multiple times, you know, how, you know, Portland could be a military target for sure if we entered a third world war with China and Russia. I mean, it's right there, really not too far from the ocean, be it about 60 miles out. So what do you think about that? Because I think it's a little bit larger than Portland being coined Little Beirut with all the protesters. I think there's a bigger geopolitical interest in this region.
You know, I don't have a tremendous amount of information on that, but it wouldn't surprise me because, you know, Portland does have, certainly has a reputation around the United States as being a city that has an incredibly large activist community. We've been, labeled as a little Beirut. And so it wouldn't surprise me if they want to make Portland an example. And maybe even have some plans where they exercise military comes in here and the government comes in here to exercise some form of military law to see how people react to it. But I think it's just around the corner. I think as more and more Americans become unemployed, more and more violence in the streets across America, I think you're going to eventually have to probably see martial law in a lot of cities around this country. In fact, what you're already seeing, a lot of cities that now have curfews. So it's already starting.
And just to kind of add to that, he's talking about cities with curfews. I recently came across an article that is titled Law and Order, Curfew America. This comes to us from The Independent in the UK. And they're talking about high crime rate areas where they set up curfews. And there's also a town here in America in the state of Arkansas where there was martial law repeatedly for several days. People had to stay in their home. And that is basically martial law if you're telling people in a marine type of fashion, you either go back in your house or you go to jail. But the reality is a lot of people are coming out because they needed something to eat. But they use the pretext of lots of crime and some rapes and some gang killings to, punish everybody. So it's a real tragic situation. And we saw New Orleans with Blackwater mercenaries coming in and other troops by the thousands all ready to go, including from the state of Oregon. There's a whole list of states where they called the mercenary troops from, mercenary thugs. And that's quite alarming. We're about out of time. I want to mention a couple of things that are in the news that you may be interested in. These are all at alexansary.com. Confirmed, Mexico drug plane used for U.S. rendition flights. You know, that plane that crashed in the Yucatan last year, it's confirmed it is a U.S. plane. Who's it confirmed by? Well, it's a new report that's citing documents from the United States and the European Parliament. The plane was carrying Colombian drugs for the fugitive leader of Mexico's Sinaloa cartel. It also said the U.S. Federal Aviation Administration's logbook registered that the plane had traveled between the U.S. territory and the U.S. military base in Guantanamo. In another report on the topic of chemtrails and manipulating the weather, secret geoengineering projects threaten unknown environmental dangers. So we have a lot of mad scientists with their own idea of how to combat climate change. And one of those suggestions is to pump sulfur into the air and the oceans for that matter. And there are a number of scientists, some of them that do believe the official version of global warming. Even some of them are saying this is a bit too much and this could pose a environmental catastrophe. And so with that, we're out of time. I want to thank you for listening. I want to thank both Mikes for being with us tonight, Mike Hastie and Mike Mayo. We'll be back next week, same time, same website. You can find my website at alexansary.com and check out a wide variety of news covering some of the top stories of the globe taking place this week with China, Russia, the United States, the surveillance grid, the economy, your health, and much, much more. We'll see you next week. Thanks for listening.